Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, and today we are joined by Ryan Herrings of the Locked On Badgers podcast to discuss, you guessed it, Brad Davidson. No, we're talking Johnny Davis and his potential on the New York Knicks.
And honestly, he made Believer, I think Believer's out of both of us, Gavin. We talk about a lot with Johnny Davis. You know, how is he going to survive in the NBA? How much did injuries and a high usage rate affect his sophomore campaign? How many strides did he make from freshman to sophomore, which, spoiler alert, a lot? And also just how impressive was it that he was able to assert himself as much as he did on a team that traditionally does not reward guys super early in their college careers to become a potential lottery pick as a sophomore, and much more. We had a really great long-ranging discussion. We'll get into it next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts without a five. Ewing for the win. Yes!
Up, up left. Now fires it.
He's good! And he's fouled! And
he's out! Anthony for three.
Infectious. You are Locked On Knicks, and today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered with all the latest odds, news, and scores. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we wanted to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. If you didn't know yet, now you know we're on YouTube, and it's cool. You don't just get to see me and Alex, you'll get to see a whole bunch of guests covering the NBA draft. So you want to see some new faces, you want to see our faces, certainly go check us out on YouTube. But hey, who's talking to you? I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster, just wrapped up my spring season. Alex, already thinking about broadcasting some football in the fall, but much more relevant to your interests, he is Alex Wolf, editor-in-chief of the greatest Knicks website in the whole wide world, The Strickland, and you can check them out on social media at thestrick.land. Alex, I don't see any reason to delay because this was a fantastic conversation, so let's get right into it with Ryan, the host, of course, of Locked On Badgers, to discuss everything Johnny Davis. All right, as promised, we are joined by the host of the Locked On Badgers podcast, Ryan Herrings. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We were kidding around before I asked you to do this. Maybe like a couple hours before you came on, you said, always ready to talk Johnny Davis. And yeah, I mean, that's the feeling I get whenever we hear from him. It seems like the draft community loves him, the analysts love him, and people who followed him in college just love the guy.
Yeah, I said before the show, I could talk about him all day, any day, anytime. So I'm thrilled that you guys hit me up on this. I'm excited to do it.
All right, sweet. Let's start off from the beginning. What did you think of him when Wisconsin was recruiting him?
Yeah, so really interesting in-state prospect. He has a twin brother, Jordan Davis, and they kind of became a package deal where Wisconsin had to offer one really to get the other. If they hadn't offered Jordan Davis, who was a good player but not up to that caliber, Johnny probably would have left the state and gone pursued bigger offers. So he was a high three-star prospect, but it was pretty well understood in state that this is a very special talent. And there's a reason Wisconsin was all over him from the jump. So it was a big battle that wasn't a five-star guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so this, it makes things all the more interesting, right? Like we've talked about this with some draft people that we've brought on in the sense of, this is sort of a very sophomore-dominated class, draft class in general. It's not just Johnny. There's also, you know, Benedict Mathurin, who's a sophomore. Jaden Ivey is a sophomore, like towards the top of the draft. He's getting, you know, top 3-4 buzz now. You know, there's a lot of guys that really kind of flash their second year. Mark Williams, even with Duke. I mean, there's like a bunch, honestly. I could probably keep going, but I won't in the interest of time. But, like, what did you see from Johnny as a freshman? Like, what kind of indicator there to show that could be in him, a potential lottery pick in the NBA? But also, like, where did he struggle? You know, and I guess kind of after last season, what were your thoughts on him going forward? Did you think that there was this potential, like, star outbreak in him? Or did you think that he was going to kind of settle in as a role player? Or, like, what were your general thoughts, like, I guess, like, this time last year?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was if I'm going to be honest, it would really be in between those two spots, in between a role player and settling in. Everybody expected him to take a big jump, but very, very few people honestly expected this. A big part of it was when he came into Wisconsin as a freshman, is Wisconsin has a system. They're a system program, right? Some schools recruit blue chip talent. You plug it in and you let it roll. Wisconsin recruits guys, and you have to buy into the system. It takes time. So, you know, Davis came into a very senior laden team, a lot of veterans, and it just is a hard rotation to crack as a young guy at Wisconsin. I mean, they famously, years ago, they recruited a five-star guy and redshirted him, you know, one of the best centers in the country. It's just, that's kind of how Wisconsin rolls. So the short, it surprises a lot of people outside of the program to see a blue chip talent not play a lot the first year. That's kind of Wisconsin. Like Sam Decker went through the same thing, you know, blue chip guy that really didn't play a ton right away. So yeah, it wasn't a big surprise to struggle out of the gate. Nobody really expected this big jump. His freshman year, the handle was a little loose, a few too many turnovers, kind of struggled to create his own shot. But he was just a dude that improved a ton over the offseason. And the whispers inside the program, he was always been a dog. Like, he's always been a dude who was going to really grind. And that's one of his best attributes. He's got an intangible quality that it was never really said, but some of the players that could have came back left because Johnny Davis was going to take their job. Like, Johnny Davis was going to be the dude, and some of the upperclassmen weren't going to settle for that. So that kind of gives you a look into his psyche.
What was sort of the first indicator early in the sophomore season mm-hmm. where you're like, oh boy, this dude is really special, and oh man, he might not be here past this year?
Yeah, I mean, the real explosion, the firework that went off is that first Purdue game, right? So, you know, he came out of the gate really well, but he played in that first Purdue game, and he actually, you know, the great thing about Johnny Davis and the thing that NBA friend and our fan base are going to really like about him wherever he ends up is he's a total two-way player. Like, he's a guy that really plays hard on both ends. So that first Purdue game, Jaden Ivey is coming in, and he guards Ivey. He also put up 37 and had 14 rebounds, you know, and he held Ivey to 3-9 on jump shots. Like, he carries such an offensive load. It's very unique to see a player like that also take the best perimeter score on the other team and lock him up for 40 minutes. But that's, again, there's an intangible quality of Johnny Davis that separates him from other similarly athletic players. So it was that first Purdue game where you really saw this dude's special. He's different.
Yeah, I was I'm going to go change our script a little bit here because we had some questions written out, but you just said something that made me want to jump to a later question here. So, I mean, describe Johnny Davis as a defender to me, because we'll get into this more in a minute, but mm-hmm. I think that he had one of, from what I understand and from what I've seen from watching, like, he had one of the worst contexts of any potential lottery pick in this draft, as far as having a team where he was the guy on the team, for better or worse. Like, his usage rate was obscene for a college player, even for a pro player, to be honest. But normally in college, you know, you get coaches that want to get, you know, a little more of a team-based offense going and not have guys with 30-plus usages. And meanwhile, here's Johnny Davis with a 32.5 usage percentage. But, mm-hmm. I mean, what does it say about him as a defender that, you know, we saw this, for example, to Knicksify this, right? Mm-hmm. We saw this with RJ Barrett this year, where he had been really taking some strides as a defender. He was talking about in the beginning of the season, like, I want to be taking on the other team's best player every night, you know, whatever. And he did that pretty admirably, like last year and this year, honestly, to start the year. But then around midseason, he had to take on more of an offensive load, and the Knicks started kind of transitioning him into being like the top dog on offense, and the defense slipped a bit. So there is mm-hmm. definitely a correlation there of, like, if you're expending that much energy on offense, how are you going to find that energy on defense? Which is why you see defensive specialists and 3-and-D guys and stuff in the NBA. But, like, what does it say about his defense, first off, and his work ethic? But then how much higher do you think the defensive ceiling could be for him in the NBA once he doesn't have to be a 33 usage guy anymore? Like, because I think that's going to be a huge deal for him.
Right. Now, it's a great question. You know, so if we start with the defense, he's a guy that's always athletically going to struggle with the bigger threes in the NBA. You know, he's 6'5". He's not doesn't have a freakish wingspan. He's not a freakish athlete. But what he will do, and I start off kind of a sour note, but he's a guy that every game brings it. Like, we've seen enough players, NBA and college, like, half a defense is giving a crap. Like, literally just give a crap about it. Johnny Davis really plays hard both ends. Carries, like you said, a massive offensive workload. Second biggest usage rate in the Big Ten, and still guarding the best wing defenders or wing players on the other side. He can definitely guard ones and twos. He's physical. He's stronger than he looks. He's definitely somebody who will get in somebody's face, not back down. He can handle guards in the post. Really, really intelligent basketball player. Like, definitely understands the game, as a good IQ. Struggles a little bit off ball. You can tell it's just not something that's quite there yet, but he has the IQ and the intangibles, the work ethic to make up for it. Better on ball defender than an off ball guy right now. He's going to struggle. Like I said, I don't think in a lot of lineups you're going to want him guarding threes a ton, but in the playoffs, some of that stuff downsizes, right? And he can go one through three against certain lineups for sure. But you know, he's a guy that is a high floor player, and he's never going to be a negative defensively, is what I would say.
All right, we're going to be back with Ryan in just a sec to discuss how Johnny Davis's numbers might not be as good as they should have been due to a variety of factors out of his control, and why in the NBA he might actually be an even more efficient and perhaps better overall player than he was in college. But first, I have to tell you guys how to avoid something really terrible. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill, because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel. Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there whenever you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped save them over $100 million. Like Matthew B., who says, in a matter of seconds, I saved $660 for the year on my DirecTV bill, saved $120 for the year on my SiriusXM bill, and $840 a year on my car insurance. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. What do you have to flip ends of the floor? Mm-hmm. What ultimately makes him special as a scorer? Because I watch him and it's a pretty unique game, at least as far as NBA prospects go. Like, he almost reminds me of some of those great college guards you'd see early in the 2000s, where it's very off kilter. It's very creative. A lot of it is predicated on his footwork and finishing at angles and with timing that you just don't really expect, and that kind of surprise defenders. But at the same time, guys never seem to catch up to it as games go on. So I'll leave it to you. What kind of separates him for someone who, to your point, isn't that elite Jaden Ivey type of athlete?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I honestly, and I don't mean this lightly, but he's got a lot of Devin Booker type nuance to his game. There's a lot of tools in the toolbox for a young player. The footwork's incredible. He can get tough shots off mid range. He goes baseline. He's a little fake spin. You know, a lot of just nuance. Go left or right. Pull up at the elbow. And he's a guy who he's a sneaky playmaker. You know, he was surrounded by a team that couldn't hit a shot, and as the season wore on, people just started blitzing him. Every pick and roll, they would send two bodies, and he makes a lot of right plays. Again, similar to Devin Booker in a way where Devin Booker's not a point guard, obviously, and neither is Johnny Davis, but he can be a secondary playmaker in a way where he makes right passes. He can find people in the corner. You know, so when you talk about his offensive game, it's a lot of old school. And again, I think if you look at his game and some of what Devin Booker's been able to do, I really think that's the high-level comp. I mean, he's not Booker. Booker was just a first-team All-NBA guy. But he's got that type of game, you know, with the ability to hunt a shot against any type of matchup. And it just makes him unique among college players that have really become either, you know, the three or get to the rim. Davis has a lot more nuance in that.
So you bring up threes. That's where I want to go next. You know, everything I feel like when you look at it with Davis is context dependent on the fact that, like you said, he was like the alpha and the omega of his team. He was getting double sent at him constantly from a certain point on. I'll get to it in a minute, but he also had like an injury that sort of hobbled him a bit down the stretch, which really killed some of his numbers in many ways. But he shot 30.6% from three for the season on the overall, which, you know, I think he shot almost four attempts per game. So it's not like a small sample size. How do you project him as a shooter in the NBA, where he's not going to have to do quite as much self-creation, and where he can maybe get some easier looks? Like, do you think he has a translatable shot? Do you think it might be a bit of a work in progress? Like, what's your overall read on his three-point shooting?
Yeah, that's really the big fly in the ointment for everybody. And it's a legitimate concern. You know, I think the percentage goes up when he starts getting easier shots. That's kind of an easy take on it, and a lazy take on it. But I think sometimes the easy take's also kind of the true one. A lot of his shots are end of shot clock. It's coming off a screen. It's moving. It's, you know, basically, and it's not just sometimes having to, it's always dealing with the other team's best defender. You know, it's shooting over 6-8 wings at Rutgers that they have an abundance of, for example. So, you know, some of it, I think the percentages just go up. He's going to get better looks. He's going to be in the corner on catch and shoot. Now, where he's not real good yet, and where I don't know if he's going to ever get to the point where he's a really good NBA shooter coming off the move for a three, or pulling up in transition. You know, that's a unique skill set that a lot of NBA shooters don't have. I don't know if he's ever going to be that type of shooter. I think the percentages will sit in the mid 30s when he starts getting easier looks, though. And that, coupled with the mid-range game, the ability to get to the free throw line, I think it's going to make him a good enough shooter to be a really good offensive player. But I don't think it's ever going to be an elite skill for him.
Yeah, I'll throw this out. Over the first 16 games of the year, he was just under 39% from three. Mm-hmm. Last 12 games of the year, I think, let me see, I got the stat right here. He was something like, 22% from three. So obviously that ankle injury, maybe just fatigue, to your point, constantly going against those double teams, impacted him. But I think we mentioned over and over again, but I'll reiterate it one more time. You just watch some clips of him. And I saw someone tweeted out this clip. It was like, you know, how is this guy going to get to the rim in the NBA? And it's him like dribbling, and then a second defender comes over to the right and he spins back and he goes towards the left. And then a second defender comes over that way and strips him. I'm like, there's no world. And like, even on the worst team in the NBA, there's not three guys locked in on him. But I'm curious how that context shaped his passing ability, because obviously he was such a big threat, and sometimes that could lead to guys putting up monster assist numbers. In the case of Davis, it led to only 2 assists per game. That being said, even if you're setting guys up for easy shots, you still need guys who could finish. And I know they had a longtime Wisconsin legend, Brad Davidson, but my understanding is outside of him, there wasn't a whole lot of shooting, and especially at the big positions, there weren't really a lot of elite finishers there. Definitely correct me on that if I'm wrong, but what do you make of that passing ability? And to your point, in that secondary creation role where maybe it's RJ Barrett or an Emmanuel Quickley for the Knicks driving into the lane, drawing two guys, kicking out to him, and his ability using that IQ to attack a scramble defense and just make the next pass, make the next play.
Yeah. So a big part of that, and you hit the nail on the head, is, you know, and I certainly am not going to make every excuse in the book for Johnny Davis either, but you know, there was nobody on the team that shot over 34%, you know, so he was passing out to guys shooting 27%. None of the bigs were finishers. And it really just became you know, sometimes the best offense was a bad Johnny Davis shot. And then you hope for an offensive rebound. So, you know, like some of the assist numbers, he actually makes some really creative passes and some really good decisions coming off the pick and roll. He'll find guys in the corner. He'll make that quick hockey assist pass where he'll get it, ping it around. And it was just, there was no shot creation around him at all, you know, which killed the spacing. But it also just, some of the stuff that he set people up, I mean, he spoon fed some people, because at that point, especially later in the season, you know, again, teams were just blitzing him, which makes sense. I'm surprised it took that long, quite frankly. You know, so teams were blitzing him, and, you know, there's only so many times you can hit Brad Davidson or Tyler Wall. You guys don't know that name. He started off the season, I think, 1-for-19 from three, you know, so there's only so many times you can hit that dude in the corner before you just kind of start driving into two people and pulling up from 15. So I think that I really do think the secondary playmaking is one of his most underrated skill sets. He's not going to be a point guard for sure, but as a secondary guy, I think he's going to surprise people.
Yeah, I think in many ways, you know, if the Knicks decide to go with him and they feel like he's, you know, going to be able to have the creation level that they want and everything else, I mean, I think that he would fit pretty perfectly with what they're trying to build right now. With, if Emmanuel Quickley is going to be your starting point guard and RJ Barrett is going to be a guy that's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, like, I think a guy like Johnny could be really useful. You know, looking just beyond the raw assist numbers, he had a 14.8 assist percentage, which, again, in a vacuum, not a great number, but, you know, given that that's a 32% usage, 15% assist percentage, but also like the fact that, like you said, nobody on the team shot better than 35% from three, pretty easy to make a case for him being like a pretty good passer, all things considered. And again, I agree, from what I've watched of him, I would never say this is a point guard. And I know that a lot of Knicks fans, you know, are saying like, go up and get Ivy. He's a point guard. Sure. Like he's not either. I don't think he is either. You know, he's a good guard. He's a good scoring guard, but you know, maybe you don't need a point guard on the Knicks team. Maybe they do have a guy that they can start in Emmanuel Quickley that you would just want another secondary guy that can sort of create for himself and have the wherewithal to kick out to others.
All right, guys, we are going to come back with Ryan one final time to finish up talking Johnny Davis and also his hottest take on one Big Ten prospect who you're potentially all overlooking. But before we get into that, I want to tell you how you guys can maybe bet on the draft and make some money yourself. If you've been listening to this podcast, it'll probably go pretty well for you. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, news, and odds, including this year's basketball championship matchup, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, all the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. And Alex, I found out today that more includes some pretty tasty draft odds. Where I'm looking is the fourth overall pick, because that's sort of the wild card spot, right? You have Jaden Ivey at minus 200, Keegan Murray at plus 250, Shaedon Sharpe at plus 500, Dyson Daniels at plus 2000, AJ Griffin at plus 2500. I think I'd divide my money there between Keegan Murray and AJ Griffin, just because I could kind of see the Kings sort of falling all over themselves, not able to find a trade partner. And they just take the guy that they consider the best fit for their team, even if it's a reach. And I could see one of Murray or Griffin potentially being that guy, Alex. But one final time, head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, that's where the game starts.
I guess, I don't know. I'm not even quite sure where exactly to go with like final questions on him. One thing though that I will say, and you know, this is a good opportunity to revisit that injury, right? And so down the stretch of the season, he was hurt on a flagrant foul, I believe during the Big Ten tournament, right?
Right before it, actually. Yeah.
Right before it. So yeah, yep. So he was hurt on a flagrant foul, had an ankle injury apparently, but then was able to come right back, but seemed not quite right, from what I understand. And a lot of his numbers really dipped down the stretch as a result. Wisconsin ends up getting knocked out early in the NCAA tournament, which I think, rightly or wrongly, I talk about this a lot when we talk with draft people and stuff. Like, I think that does have a pretty outsized effect on some of these guys. Mm-hmm. And their perception is like, well, how far did you get in the tournament? Like, Ty Washington was talked about as a potential,
right,
you know, lottery pick, and now might go in the 20s, you know, and it's like, well, what changed between, you know, March and the middle to end of April? And it's that his team got knocked out in a 15-2 matchup, you know, and he looked terrible in it. And so I think that those sort of things affect perception. So like, I guess what I'm overall getting at, how much do you think the injury affected him down the stretch of the season? Do you think that he has, you know, you've already mentioned that he's not going to be the best athlete on the floor in the NBA, but do you think that he has NBA caliber athleticism in the sense that he'll have a good enough first step to get around guys? And especially with a better context around him where he's not having to try to split double teams and stuff all the time, will he be a little better at, you know, in that secondary role, getting a kick out, getting an opportunity to attack a closeout or something? Will that make all the difference for him as far as being able to utilize what he can athleticism wise in the NBA?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. And I don't know if we have the full answer to that yet. Well, I'll start with the injury, because you mentioned how much did that impact him. The injury killed him. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a light switch. You know, and you can look at the shooting numbers, you can look at the offense. But it kind of also speaks to the dude that Johnny Davis, he shouldn't have played in the Big Ten tournament. Wisconsin was a regular season champion. They were going to have a great seed no matter what. The fact that he was in the Big Ten tournament playing in a game he didn't need to play on a bad ankle with a potential lottery future in front of him. Again, it's just that's the kind of dude he is. He's a total intangible guy, which allows everything else to play up. Now, the athleticism thing's interesting. Again, I'm going to go back to this comp, and I don't mean to beat the dead horse on this, but if you watch like early Booker with Kentucky. Now, Booker with Kentucky came out and he was shooting like 39%, but again, he was shooting 39% because they could throw the ball into Karl Anthony Towns and Trey Lyles, and he had seven NBAers on that team, so all he got was wide open threes. But if you watch his ability to get in the paint, to drive, to score, him and Davis have incredibly similar ways that they carry themselves athletically, the fluidity to their game. They're just kind of understated athletes, and they have a quicker first step than people realize. So I think Davis is going to play just fine athletically at the NBA level. He's actually great in transition, which again is similar to Booker. You know, even though he doesn't seem like a high flyer in transition, he's incredibly, incredibly good, incredibly tough to get off his driving angles. So I think the athleticism will play just fine, because it's going to pair with his intangible just give a crap, for lack of a better word. Like, he just gives a crap. And I could use the other word there, but we're going to keep it. He it matters to him, you know?
Yeah.
So the athleticism pairs with that, and it pairs with his physicality and his toughness. And I don't think it's going to be an impediment. It's certainly not going to be a strength in the way Jaden Ivey can just go and elevate over somebody. But his athleticism is going to play up enough to allow everything else he brings to the table to be a pretty good player. I think the floor is sky high on Davis. I think that's – when you look at Davis, you're looking at a guy who's a big-time high-floor player. No matter what, I would be stunned if – barring injury, which you can never predict. I'd be stunned if he wasn't a high-level rotation player, you know, a really good role player. I think he has enough intangible qualities and offensive skill to have a bit of a higher ceiling than that as well, though.
Yeah, I think – I mean, this is a trap that everyone falls into, but when we talk about athleticism, everyone thinks, like, kind of what Shaedon Sharpe has, the run and jump athleticism. But as a longtime suffering Knicks and Suns fan, I've watched a lot of Booker, and where he kills people is he's just strong, like really, really strong for the position. And his ability to start and stop and really elevate on his jumper is pretty insane. And with Johnny Davis, I see a lot of – that same skill set in terms of his deacceleration and his ability to just to find like weird angles and good instincts and all that stuff. I mean, that's athleticism too. It's not just all basketball IQ, but I guess where I want to finish up, and you were just touching on this. What do you think his ceiling ultimately is as an NBA player? Because to me, he has to have an elite handle if he's going to be an all-star in the NBA because of that lack of aforementioned run and jump athleticism. And I didn't watch enough of him to gauge if that's plausible, but I think that could be the great separator for him. And that can give him the access to use that, those great instincts around the basket and that great footwork around the basket.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, ceiling's a little tricky, obviously, because what's his 1%, you know, his 1% ceiling is an all-star player, but his realistic ceiling, I think it makes more sense to talk about. I think his realistic ceiling is really more of like a third scorer on a good team, which is super valuable. A third scorer is a two-way guy, right? So we talked about RJ earlier in the show, who for you guys evolved into a 20-point scorer. Well, you don't want that dude guarding Booker, for example, you know, guarding the better wings. So this is a guy, I think, in just talking about the Knicks fit, you know, he could be that secondary scorer, that secondary playmaker, but also taking the best offensive player on the other side and saving RJ, you know, some of that wear and tear. So I really think that's his realistic ceiling, to be a good second, third option, but a guy who also defensively, you know, is an impactful above average, you know, combo two-way wing, that kind of thing. I mean, he's not going to be an elite defender, but a very good defensive wing that can score and be a bit of a secondary playmaker. You know, the other thing we didn't touch on, and again, I could talk Johnny Davis for hours, so I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
But this is a guy who led the Big Ten in defensive rebounding, like as a guard. You know, he averaged over 8 a game as a guard. And that's just so unusual, but it all goes back to there's certain players, and you and I could, the three of us could rattle off a bunch of them, but there's certain players who their output outweighs, you know, their kind of the package that they should have.
Look at Steph the other night, 10 rebounds, right?
That's it. Right. And that's not unusual for him. Like, we've seen those games from Steph before. And it's just certain players that through just sheer willpower, intangibles, whatever it is, like Davis has that X factor. No matter what else happens, if he never develops a shot, he never tightens the handle, he's always going to be a dude who gives you 4 rebounds, a couple steals, takes 2 charges, takes the other best player, runs hard every single possession. Great locker room guy, you know, so all those little things that a lot of guys aren't coming into programs, aren't coming into cultures with, you're never going to have to worry about that with Johnny Davis. So that's why I say he's a really high floor guy.
Yeah, that really, I mean, that definitely will resonate with Knicks brass, I think, because that is something that they've definitely prioritized in the sense of, if you look at the guys that have been drafted by this current regime, you have Emmanuel Quickley, who another guy sneakily was getting some triple doubles down the stretch of the season. Like, despite being kind of a lithe guard, he has a good sense of timing and a good sense of hustle to get to the right place for a rebound and start the break and that sort of thing. Quentin Grimes, who showed off, you know, being a good rebounder as well as doing a lot of the other intangibles, certainly playing great defense. I think the thing that you said that resonates with me the most about Davis is the like primary or secondary defending that he could offer, in the sense of having another really good defensive guard to pair with Quickley, because some of the best minutes that the Knicks saw this year, despite whatever limitations he had as a rookie on offense, were the defensive possessions with Emmanuel Quickley and Deuce McBride out there together. That was the not even just on the Knicks. That was one of the most potent two-man lineups in the NBA because of their impact on defense. I mean, we saw certain games get down the stretch, and, you know, granted, competition level, whatever, the home stretch of the NBA season, a lot of teams are tanking, a lot of teams are resting guys, whatever. But, like, we saw whole big comebacks swung on that defensive intensity. And if we could go from starting this year with, like, Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier back there to then, you know, maybe eventually in a future world ending up with Emmanuel Quickley and Johnny Davis and RJ Barrett as sort of your third tier defender out there, I think that's a great situation to be
in. That's
pretty
scary, yeah.
Yeah, like that's a really good defensive backcourt because I think Quickley has shown a great ability to play off the energy of a gnat of a guard that really is just going to be like up in everybody's face all the time, defending his butt off, getting over screens, everything else. Like Quickley feeds off that, RJ feeds off that. I think that would be a really good fit for the Knicks. But yeah, you certainly did a really good job. I can't speak for Gavin as well, but I think you did a really good job for me in getting me super excited about Johnny Davis on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Sorry, I wanted to flip it back to you guys really quick. Who do you want? Like who's your, you have a favorite at 11? You guys are picking 11, right?
Yeah. So we've got, it was funny because we did our Locked On mock draft and we had the choice between Johnny Davis and Dyson Daniels, and Alex is a big Dyson Daniels guy and he's converted me to some extent. I'm really into Malachi Branham as well. And Davis, I was honestly just from like a lack of knowledge, I was a little slower to come around on, but after this podcast, I don't know, you've kind of convinced me where I'd be pretty thrilled with any of the three of them. Alex, are you still team Dyson, or was this enough for you?
I think I would still give it to Dyson by a hair. I mean, mostly just because I'm really intrigued by his switchability on defense and stuff, and the fact that he could potentially defend 1-4, maybe even 1-5, and that he was actually more of like the positional point guard for the G League Ignite down the stretch, and that he was sort of being groomed for that. But I think Johnny looks like a more complete player at this particular moment. So if the Knicks want someone who's going to be more of an instant contributor, which has definitely been their type so far, I would not be surprised at all if they were faced with the same decision that we were, if they would go with like a Johnny Davis over a Dyson Daniels and just say like, let's take a guy that projects to be like a 15-5-5 guy and just see what happens, you know, and have, you know, another great contributor to kind of pair with these other really promising young players that we have on the team. So, yeah, I think I'm still team Daniels, but Johnny's definitely worked his way up. Certainly this podcast, I think, opened my eyes a bit to moving him up on that, like, Knicks-specific list. Of course, if certain guys drop or something, that changes the calculus, you know. If Shaedon Sharpe makes it there, maybe on pure potential alone, I would say just go for him, you know.
That's a lottery ticket. Like, that guy's an absolute lottery ticket, and if he hits – I mean, those are all three good options too. Like Malachi, I like a lot. Like he's a very intriguing guy. You know, you guys are going to have a ton of really interesting options, especially at the wing spots when you guys roll around.
Yeah. I'm coming around on Jalen Duren a little bit too.
Yeah.
Ryan, actually, I have one last thing for you. And maybe it's Malachi. Maybe it's someone else. Do you have any hot takes on any other Big Ten prospects? Any like Jaden Ivey slander you want to put out there? Or anyone else like really standing out to you just following Wisconsin, good or bad, the whole year? Or you look at their draft position, you're like, huh, I don't think that's quite right based on what I saw.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like, so I love Ivey straight up. Like, I think Ivy's a star. I love his game, you know. You know, Keegan Murray, Iowa, is really interesting to me. I think he's another really high floor player, a guy that's going to make a team better, not necessarily superstar ceiling. You know, EJ Liddell is a guy that I was talking to, Rafael Barlow, the Locked On guy. Yeah. He was saying, he's great. Barlow's great. You know, we were talking about EJ a little bit, and he kind of convinced me a little bit on EJ and just is in terms of a guy who is going to be overlooked because of his size, you know, that kind of stuff. But a guy could easily carve out a really productive long career because of his feel for the game. So, I mean, I guess if I had one hot take, it would be that that EJ Liddell is probably going to outplay his draft position wherever he ends up going. You know, guys that just have a great feel for the game can score. Another guy with a lot of intangible X-factor stuff that allows everything else to play up. I think he's going to outplay wherever he ends up getting drafted would be my hot take. But he's also the guy that, you know, NBA, those guys always fall, right? It's just the NBA, the way teams and players and scouts look at guys, you know, that guy's always going to fall. So not really a hot take, but that's the one guy I would say. Yeah, EJ Liddell, I think I'm higher on than most.
Well, all in all, lottery and otherwise, seems like it's going to be a pretty big draft year for the Big Ten, with potentially four, maybe five, they could swing it, lottery picks happening here. I mean, it should be a pretty exciting night for all fans of Big Ten basketball. But Ryan, I think this is a good point to wrap up this show. Did you want to remind everybody where to find you online and of course, where to find your work and all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah. And once again, I really appreciate the time, guys. This has been a lot of fun. You can find me on Locked On Badgers, you know, obviously chopping it up with everything Johnny Davis and the Wisconsin Badgers. So as the draft comes up and Davis is the most underrated prospect, I'm going to talk about that more and more. You guys can come and listen to that take. And then you can just find me on Twitter right there at Ryan and Bucky or at Locked On Badgers. So yeah, if you ever want to talk about it, I'm also a Braves, Niners, Badgers and Phoenix Suns fan. So wherever you want to go with it, I'm open game.
All right, well, we'll have you on, Ryan. You and me can just talk Suns for 40 minutes, and we'll have exactly 10 people listen. It'll be great.
That'd be perfect.
All right, cool. All right, thanks so much, Ryan. Really appreciate it. And yeah, and also if the Knicks draft Johnny Davis, we'll have to have you back as well.
Let's do it.
Cool. All right, and thank you so much, everyone, for listening. As always, please throw us a subscription, throw us a like, throw us some comments. All of it helps. But for Ryan and Alex, I'm Gavin. We'll talk to you soon with more NBA draft coverage. Until then, be good. Peace out.